I want you to think for a second about the people in your life who hold your stress.
Oh, we all have those people.
Right. You know exactly what I'm talking
Yeah.
about. Like it could be a mentor, a therapist, or a trusted advisor, maybe even a professional coach.
Yeah, the people you go to when everything feels overwhelming.
Exactly. These are the people who guide your decisions, who help you see your own blind spots, right? And they basically act as a sounding board when your own mind just feels like, well, a chaotic mess.
They really do.
You offload your pressure onto them and you walk away feeling lighter. But here is the question we never really stop to ask. Who holds their stress?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that is the great paradox of any profession that's centered on helping others.
It really is.
The very individuals whose actual job it is to carry the emotional and psychological weight of their clients, they are frequently the ones walking around with the heaviest burdens.
Right, because they absorb it all.
Exactly. And the assumption is usually, well, because they are professionals, they're somehow just immune to the gravity of the work.
Which is crazy, right? And that invisible burden is the entire focus of our deep dive today. We are looking at this brief, but man, incredibly impactful piece of writing by Martin Coville.
Yes, the vital necessity of professional coaching supervision.
That's the one. And the mission for this deep dive is to figure out why this practice of supervision isn't just, some corporate luxury or an optional add-on.
Far from it.
We are going to explore how it functions as this essential mechanism that supports a coach's well-being, drives their continuous development, and ultimately ensures that you, the client, get the best possible guidance. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Coville lays out this core problem right at the start. Coaches hold immense pressure and doubt for their clients week after week, but it is rarely asked who holds theirs.
Yeah, he frames it not as just some philosophical musing, but as a structural flaw in how we even view the profession.
A huge flaw.
To understand the weight of it, we have to look at the psychological reality of doing deep empathetic work. Coville highlights this concept called reflecting on your reflections.
Reflecting on your reflections.
Eh.
That sounds complicated.
It is. I mean, any high-level coach is already reflective. They finish a session, they look at their notes, and they evaluate how the conversation went.
Sure, standard practice.
Right. But reflecting on your own reflections, meaning noticing your own behavioral patterns, your own emotional triggers, or, identifying the client work that quietly follows you home, that is an entirely different cognitive task.
Because you're so close to it.
Exactly. Doing that objectively on your own is functionally impossible.
Yeah, you are stuck inside your own operating system. Like you can't read the label from inside the jar.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
When a coach is in a room with a client, they are processing a tremendous amount of unspoken data. They're tracking body language, hesitations, underlying fears, all of that.
All while formulating the next open-ended question.
Right. It actually makes me think of a computer's RAM.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, a coach uses their mental RAM to hold a client's complex emotional variables during a session. But if they don't have a mechanism to clear the cache, that RAM just stays bloated.
Yes, the cache gets completely full.
And their processing speed for their afternoon appointments inevitably drops to a crawl. They're like a sponge that just absorbs all this emotional water. At some point, you have to ask, who wrings out the sponge?
That RAM analogy captures the mechanism perfectly because empathy fatigue isn't just about feeling sad,
Right, it's more than that.
It is a measurable depletion of cognitive resources. When a coach takes in that unspoken data, a residue builds up.
Yeah, heavy residue.
And if that psychological cache isn't cleared, the coach loses their analytical edge, their emotional boundaries begin to fray, and eventually their own mental well-being just degrades.
Which is terrifying for both of them and the client.
Exactly. Supervision is the dedicated process of clearing that cache.
But wait, let me push back on this for a
Sir,
sec.
go ahead.
If I am hiring a highly accredited professional coach, shouldn't emotional regulation just be like a core part of their skill set?
You would think so, yes.
Right. Like, I understand they need an outlet, but why does it require this formal supervisor role? Couldn't they just, I don't know, grab coffee with a battle-tested peer or a colleague?
Just vent to a friend in the industry.
Exactly. Someone who knows the trenches, who can say, hey, I've been there, here is how I fixed it. Why doesn't that work?
Because a peer relationship carries an entirely different dynamic. It's primarily rooted in mutual assessment, ego, and often shared industry blind spots.
Ego. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. If a coach vents to a peer, The natural human tendency is for that peer to either validate them completely, which just creates an echo chamber, or to share their own venting.
Which totally shifts the focus away from actual developmental reflection.
Exactly. And worse, if they are speaking to someone in their own competitive sphere, there is this subconscious pressure to maintain a facade of competence.
Oh, so they edit what they share.
Yes, they will definitely edit what they share.
So the real vulnerabilities never actually get addressed. Like, the coach might confess that a client was difficult, but they probably won't admit that the client made them feel incompetent.
Or triggered their own imposter syndrome. Precisely the issue.
That's fascinating.
A supervisor is an entirely separate entity by design. Their job is to hold a steady, neutral space for the unspoken material.
So they aren't there to give them a grade?
No, not at all. They are not there to fix the coach's problems, nor are they there to assess their worth. They exist solely to let the real material, the deep insecurities, the unconscious biases, have somewhere safe to be examined.
Reactions a coach would never say out loud in a peer environment.
Exactly.
You know, here's where it gets really interesting, because the word supervision itself seems like a huge barrier here.
It really does have a branding problem.
It does. When I hear that term, I naturally think of, like, a micromanager demanding a status report, or some compliance officer evaluating whether you deserve to keep your job.
Right, like you're being sent to the principal's office.
Yes. It carries this heavy, punitive baggage that feels completely at odds with the safe, neutral space you were describing.
What's fascinating here is that the Association for Coaching the AC addresses this exact misconception head-on in their coach supervision guide.
Oh, really? How so?
They explicitly state that supervision is not a policing role. They define it as a trusting and collegial professional relationship.
Okay, that feels very different.
It is. The industry is actively trying to rescue the word from its corporate connotations and return it to a purely developmental context.
So it seems like they are reframing it away from a boss-employee dynamic and turning it into a partnership for, like, professional hygiene.
Professional hygiene is a great way to describe it.
Right.
And the AC breaks this down into three distinct, highly functional pillars.
Okay, let's hear them.
Instead of just listing them as abstract concepts, let's consider how they operate in a real-world scenario. Imagine a highly experienced coach who has been working for 6 months with an abrasive, combative executive.
That sounds exhausting.
Very. The first pillar the AC identifies is support.
Ah, this would be the RAM clearing phase.
Yes, the well-being aspect. Support means having a designated, confidential place to offload the personal and emotional weight of that combative executive.
So somewhere to just put it down.
Exactly. Perhaps the executive's behavior subtly reminds the coach of a toxic former boss. That dynamic is going to drain the coach's empathy reserves rapidly.
Oh, definitely.
The supervisor provides the space to process that specific emotional trigger, ensuring the coach doesn't carry that residual frustration into their next session with a completely different client.
Yeah, because if I'm the next client on that coach's schedule, I certainly don't want to be paying for guidance from someone who is secretly still wrestling with the emotional fallout of their previous appointment.
Nobody wants that.
The support pillar makes sure the coach is actually present. But if it stops there, it sounds like supervision could just turn into a weekly venting session.
It could, if there weren't other pillars.
Right, so how does it move beyond just complaining about difficult clients?
That leads directly into the AC's second pillar, development. This is the mechanism for growth.
Okay, growth.
Let's stick with the scenario of the combative executive. A supervisor listening to the coach offload might notice a pattern. They might point out that the coach is consistently pulling their punches with this executive.
Or maybe relying too heavily on safe, familiar frameworks rather than actually challenging the client's underlying behavior.
Exactly.
The coach is just playing the hits. Like, if you are a seasoned professional, it is incredibly easy to rely on the same five psychological tools.
Because they work, usually.
Right. You know what questions usually generate a positive reaction. You know what diagrams look impressive. And you just coast on those because they're comfortable.
And playing the hits is the definition of a professional plateau.
Wow, yeah.
The development pillar is designed to disrupt that plateau. The supervisor observes the coach retreating to those comfortable tools and asks the difficult questions. Like, why did you steer the client away from that topic? Are you avoiding conflict to protect the relationship, or are you protecting your own comfort?
Oh, that is a tough question to answer.
It is. They challenge the coach to stretch their capacities and confront their own developmental edges.
So it is essentially a coach for the coach.
Yes.
They are applying the same rigorous inquiry to the practitioner that the practitioner applies to their clients.
Precisely. And the final piece that anchors this entire process is the third AC pillar, professional assurance.
Assurance, okay.
This acts as the quality control and ethical safeguard. It involves consistently checking the coach's work against accepted good practice and the global code of ethics.
You know, this feels like the ultimate safety net for the industry itself.
It really does.
Because a professional coach often wields an enormous amount of influence over a client's career trajectory, their business decisions, and their personal life.
A huge amount of influence, yes.
If a coach's moral compass starts drifting, or if the boundaries of the relationship start getting blurred through transference or over-identification, all of that happens behind closed doors.
Right, in total privacy.
The client might not even realize it's happening. The supervisor is the objective third party checking the compass.
And when you synthesize those three pillars, support, development, and professional assurance, it culminates in what the author highlights as the most powerful guiding philosophy of the AC's framework.
What's that?
He says, supervision protects your clients by protecting you first.
Oh, wow. Supervision protects your clients by protecting you first. That completely flips the traditional script on professional support.
Doesn't it?
We are so conditioned to view self-care or seeking support as this inward-facing, almost self-indulgent act, like a luxury.
Right, like taking a spa day.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But this framing argues that taking care of your own psychological landscape as a practitioner is the ultimate act of service to the person sitting across from you.
Yes.
Your mental clarity is directly tied to their safety.
It completely removes the guilt or stigma from seeking help. It frames the coach's mind not just as a vessel, but as the primary instrument of their trade.
The instrument of their trade. That's good.
Think about it like in medicine. If a surgeon fails to sterilize their instruments between operations, we don't praise them for being efficient.
No, we condemn them for being negligent.
Exactly. For a coach, their emotional and cognitive bandwidth is their instrument. Supervision is the sterilization process.
That reframing makes the necessity of the practice undeniable. But, I mean, historically, whenever we look at industry guidelines or philosophical pillars outlined in some PDF, the reality of compliance is a totally different story.
Often, yes.
So are these three pillars just aspirational ideas the AC promotes? Or are they actually translating into mandatory structural standards? Like, is the broader coaching industry truly adopting this?
Oh, absolutely. We are currently witnessing a massive structural shift regarding compliance, and it extends far beyond just the Association for Coaching.
Really? Who else is doing this?
The International Coaching Federation, the ICF, which is one of the largest governing bodies globally, has moved aggressively in this exact direction.
So what does this all mean? Like, what does that shift look like in practical terms? How does a massive organization like the ICF mandate this kind of psychological hygiene?
Well, the ICF describes coaching supervision as a dynamic and reflective process of collaboration, guidance, and support. They align perfectly with the AC in emphasizing personal, professional, and ethical development.
Okay.
But the definitive move happened when the ICF updated its core competencies for the first time since 2019. Rolling out fully in 2025, this update is a watershed moment for the profession.
A core competency update only happens a few times a decade, so they don't make these changes lightly. What specifically did they alter to integrate supervision?
They updated competency 2, which is titled Embodies a Coaching Mindset.
Okay. Embodies a coaching mindset.
The 2025 update explicitly embeds the practice of working with a coaching supervisor directly into the definition of what a coaching mindset entails.
Let's pause on that wording. Embodies a coaching mindset. They didn't put supervision under a category called, like, remedial help or burnout recovery strategies.
No, they didn't.
By placing it under the fundamental mindset of the profession, they are redefining the baseline of competence.
Exactly. And the causality behind this shift is critical. For years, the industry operated on a model where supervision was often suggested only after a problem arose.
Like a client complaint.
Right. Or a coach experiencing severe burnout. It was entirely reactive. But the data and the reality of high empathy work have proven that a tough it out model is just unsustainable.
It doesn't work.
The ICF's update is an acknowledgement that the ethical and emotional risks of coaching require proactive structural guardrails.
It is a complete narrative shift from reactive penalty to proactive excellence. It makes me think of high-performance athletes.
Oh, sure.
An Olympic sprinter doesn't just go to a physical therapist when they tear a hamstring. They have a dedicated team analyzing their biomechanics every week to maintain peak condition and prevent the injury in the first place.
Exactly. The ICF is basically declaring that to be an elite mental athlete for your clients, you have to consistently work with a supervisor.
So the implication for practitioners today is profound. Whether a coach is accredited by the AC, the ICF, or is just currently working toward their credentials, supervision is no longer a peripheral activity to engage in when time permits.
Not anymore. Both of these major governing bodies are stating unequivocally that without this formal support system, a practitioner is not operating at the gold standard of the profession.
You cannot legitimately market yourself as a fully compliant, top-tier coach under these incoming standards unless you are actively engaging in this process.
Absolutely not.
And Martin Coville, the author of our source text, brings this mandate down to the operational level. He notes that as a member of both the AC and the ICF, and as an accredited coach supervisor himself, he provides this exact service.
He does. And he emphasizes that his approach mirrors the standards set by both bodies. It's protected, confidential, and collegial. But the detail that stands out most is his assertion that effective supervision must be built around you, not a checklist.
Not a checklist. Man, that distinction is paramount.
It really is.
If a supervisor operates purely as an auditor, simply ensuring the coach hits specific technical milestones during a session, that process doesn't relieve cognitive load. It adds to it.
Yes, it triggers the exact performance anxiety the coach is trying to escape.
Exactly. The process has to be centered on the human being facilitating the coaching.
Because a checklist does not absorb the emotional residue of a difficult session. The checklist does not experience empathy fatigue. The human being does.
Right.
Therefore, the supervisory relationship must meet the coach at the intersection of their technical execution and their complex humanity. It requires a supervisor who can navigate the coach's vulnerabilities without judgment while still holding them to the highest professional standards.
When you look at the entirety of this deep dive, it fundamentally elevates how we should view the coaching profession. The implementation of supervision creates this robust three-way win.
Let's summarize that win.
First, it ensures the practitioner's psychological cache is cleared and their emotional needs are met. Second, it systematically prevents the professional plateau, forcing the coach to evolve rather than just, you know, playing their greatest hits.
Right.
And third, for anyone listening who utilizes a coach for their own growth, it guarantees a higher standard of safety, objectivity, and ethical delivery.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this text reveals an unavoidable truth about human interaction.
Yeah.
Engaging in high-stakes, empathetic psychological labor without a built-in structural support system is entirely unsustainable over the long term.
It's a recipe for disaster.
It guarantees blind spots, accelerates burnout, and ultimately risks doing harm to the very individuals seeking help. The coaching industry, through the unified frameworks of the AC and the ICF's 2025 updates, is finally institutionalizing the antidote to that unsustainability.
Supervision protects your clients by protecting you first. It is a profound reframing of professional responsibility. And it leaves me with a concept I want you, the listener, to deeply consider as we close.
I love this part.
We've spent this time dissecting how the coaching industry recognized the immense toll of emotional labor and mandated a formal system to protect its practitioners. So take a look around at the rest of our society.
Yeah, look at other fields.
What other professions exist out there? Roles that rely heavily on human interaction, on absorbing trauma, and on holding the complex stress of others that desperately need to adopt a similar supervision model.
That's a great question.
Think about the people in your life who hold your stress. Are they being structurally protected so they can continue to protect you?
That is the essential question we should be asking of every helping profession.
Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We'll catch you next time.